Okay, so we've had a debate about voltages in disks last week. So mostly about the three-way instability. And we have also seen that there was some observational evidences of stuff which could look like voltages in disks. So most of the theoretical evidence for voltages are essentially 2D numerical simulations. And what I would like to talk about today is the stability of these voltages in 3D. So that's quite a big issue if you want to have a decent vortex. I mean, these disks have a finite thickness, so you won't know whether or not the voltages are stable in 3D. And that's the thing I will talk about here. So this stuff is not new. So the original elliptic instability, which I will discuss here, was found by Pierre-Lambert and Leidy in 1986. Then the extension to rotating system is Craig in 1989. He was the first one, but then several other papers. And the kind of astrophysical context for this thing was discussed by John Popalis and myself in 2009. And the extension to NHD was discussed by Nils Kernbeyer in 2009 as well. So to start, I'm going to take the Schoen sheet equations Sébastien Fromont has discussed on Tuesday. And to simplify a bit his system, I'm going to assume the system is incompressible. So that's a fairly simple problem in which the equations of motion are as follow. So we have the usual stuff. Then you have the pressure gradient, coil smalls, and the tidal potential, which I'm going to write that way, plus a continuity equation. So here I've written the tidal potential in that way. So if you recall Sébastien's tutorial, he had his S, which as I'm going to show in a minute, is actually the mean shear you have in the system. This S was equal to 3/2 of omega. And that's given by the Kip-Einan rotation profile. But here, I'm just assuming S is whatever you want. So it's more general than in the disk problem, you are in this problem, okay? So, as you can see here, this system admits a very simple solution, which is just a plain shear, linear shear, which can be written Uy equal to minus Sx. Ux equal not Uz equal 1, right? So just a plain shear, and...
Excuse me, sir?
Yes.
Can I back you up real quick?
Oh,
sure. I'm very sorry.
So, so this is a linear shear. That's the x direction, which is like the radial direction in the disk. And this is the y direction, and the shear looks like that. Okay? So that's like the azimuthal direction phi. So now what we are going to do here is we are going to say, okay, I have this system plus a vortex embedded in this shear flow. So what I'm going to do is that I'm going to perturb this flow with a vortex of elliptical shape. So typically, it's going to look like this. Okay? So we have a vortex which I'm going to define in a minute. This vortex has two main axes, A and B, and you can define the aspect ratio of the vortex. So this is A, this is B, and the aspect ratio chi is A over B.
Okay?
When you say vortex, you mean vorticity.
I'm going to define it in a minute. I'm just defining the shape, and then I will define the stuff completely. So that's chi, the ratio A over B. And there is this angle here, theta, with respect to the y-axis. Okay. So now what we're going to do is that I'm going to say that this stuff has a vorticity which is equal to the background vorticity outside of this region, and which is going to have a constant vorticity but different from the outside in this region. So it's essentially here in region 1, I will have omega z, which is just a background shear, so it's going to be minus s. And inside, I'm going to have, so that's region 1, and in region 2, inside the vortex, it's going to be omega z equal minus s plus a fluctuation of vorticity, which is constant. So this stuff is a patch of constant vorticity. Okay? So this sort of problem has been studied extensively by Kida in 1981. And so I'm not going to go through the derivation of the dynamic of this thing. So the only two things you have to remember is that, first, the total area delimited by this region is constant during the evolution. That's obvious. It's conservation of vorticity. And second, you keep the elliptical shape. The only thing you're allowed to do is to modify the angle and modify the aspect ratio. And you can find dynamical equations for this system, which I'm going to write down.
As your father, but this is an exact solution in the infinite, in an infinite medium.
Yes. So you only get dynamical equations for theta and chi, which are, so that's the thing you can find in Kida's paper. So d chi over dt is s chi sine 2 theta, and d theta over dt is something a bit nasty, cos 2 theta minus 1, So it's not defined exactly in this form in Kida's paper, but you can play around and find these two equations.
Sorry.
Yeah.
So you assume that here there is additional kind of law in the form of vorticity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? So you impose vorticity to this system.
I impose this patch of vorticity, right, as an initial condition, and I ask what is the time evolution of this patch of vorticity in this shear flow.
Perturbed in what way?
I just put this patch of vorticity. Let's say at t equals 0, I say the vorticity outside is that. The vorticity in this elliptical region is that.
But if it's an exact solution, then, I mean...
I'm not saying it's a stationary solution yet. I'm just put that, and what I find is that I get dynamical equations for the evolution of this patch. And these are the dynamical
equations. If the right-hand side is not zero, then this is not a stationary solution.
I've not written it zero.
No,
this
of
course
not.
I'm
just trying to answer my question.
It's going to be zero in a minute. Just wait.
Okay.
So there are two stationary solutions for Toby. The first one is theta equals zero, which means that the vortex is elongated in the y direction. Okay? So if you say theta equals zero, then you can, and if you ask d theta by dt equals zero, then you get an equation for delta omega. Okay? So that the vortex is actually a stationary solution.
Sorry, how theta is defined? Is it angle or what?
It's the angle here.
Ah, okay.
It's this theta here. So that's the angle between the semi-major axis and the y axis. Right. So theta equals 0 means that the vortex is aligned with the y-axis. Okay. So if I say theta equals 0, and I say this is 0, then you can get an equation for delta omega, which is minus s 1 over chi, chi plus 1 divided by chi minus 1. So what this thing is, it's a stationary solution first, of course, but it's also an anticyclone, because the fluctuation of vorticity is negative, right? Whereas the orbital frequency here, which is not involved in this problem yet, but in a disk, you would have a positive omega. So that stuff, the delta omega, has the opposite sign compared to the rotation axis in a disk. So this stuff is an anticyclone. Okay? If you look at the stability of this system, so it's a bit technical, but you can convince yourself that if you perturb, let's say, the angle of this stuff slightly, then you're going to modify slightly chi, and this term has a negative derivative with respect to chi, so that the vortex will relax back to its equilibrium position. So this solution is stable. Yes?
If you include the curvature terms, does that destabilize it?
Well, the thing is, there is no analytical solution with curvature. Now, if you put such a patch in a curved numerical simulation, you find that it's more or less stable. But that's, you know, a poor evidence. It's the best I can say. Yes?
Are there any assumptions when these equations for chi and theta can be obtained?
Not that I know of, no.
So this is
Euler equations, that's it.
Ah, just Euler equations.
Yes, okay. So essentially these equations. Okay. You solve for these equations.
Okay.
That's it. So, something I forgot to say. So this term, the first one, is essentially the deformation of the patch by the background flow. Whereas this term is the rotation of the patch itself due to its deformation. So there are two components. It's known, for example, that if you take an elliptical vortex in a stationary flow, then the elliptical vortex will rotate on itself. So it's this term here, and that term is just the mean shear, okay? So essentially what you find is an equilibrium between these two things. The shear is trying to rotate in one direction, and the vortex wants to rotate in the other direction, so that you end up in a stationary configuration.
Sorry, is this 2D?
This is 2D, yeah. For the moment it's all 2D.
But constant vorticity patch.
Constant vorticity patch in 2D, constant linear shear flow.
Right, so with the Coriolis term gone, this is a Kida vortex.
Yes, it's a Kida vortex. So you have also another solution if you try to consider this term, which is theta equal pi over 2. This one is a bit peculiar. If you say that, then you get another solution for delta omega. And this one is a cyclone. So it has a positive vorticity perturbation. It's S chi plus 1 divided by chi minus 1. So this solution is essentially a vortex which is perpendicular to the mean shear and which is a cyclone.
So this time, because this term is negative, remember for theta equals 0, this one was positive. Here for pi over 2, this one is negative.
So because of that, it goes unstable. And what happens if you plot a time history of, so I can do theta and chi. We do here. Yep. So this is theta as a function of time. So you have pi over 2 here, and it goes like that. And chi as a function of time, and it goes like that. So that's what you get if you solve for this linear system. As soon as you perturb slightly the system around theta equal pi over 2, you get this behavior. So what this thing is saying is that, well, you do have a stationary solution for cyclones, but these solutions are not stable. And it means that as soon as you perturb it, then the vortex gets sheared away like that. Okay? It rotates, and the aspect ratio goes to infinity. So you don't have any, well, at least in this model, you don't have any stationary cyclonic solution. You only get anticyclones. And that's why people always talk about anticyclones in the disk community. It's because cyclones are not stable. Right. So is this clear? Yes.
So, I think I missed this. How in the presence of motion, the chi by dt and dp by dt, how is delta w, how is that related to theta and chi?
It's the velocity fluctuation you put initially, and that's conserved. So it's a constant of motion. Oh, you choose freely.
Oh,
and the idea is to find these delta omega so that you get a stationary solution.
Okay.
Yes.
For the stable vortex, is there any constraint on the aspect ratio that gets very long and thin? Can it emit filaments like it would if it were just by itself? Or
Well, in this model, it essentially gets elongated up to infinity. But if you were to add viscosity, then yes, you could get like, I don't know if it's your question, but the infinitely elongated vortex eventually see itself. Uh-huh. And you get, because you can have a finite viscosity, then you are allowed to like mix vorticity or PV, and then you end up with a band.
But the question,
but maybe I don't understand.
The lamp vortex, the free elliptic patch,
yes,
is unstable when the aspect ratio exceeds
not in this case. In this case, it's always stable up to pi equal infinity. Yes.
I suppose if you relax the constant with the patch constraint, you could screen out.
Yeah, so you can find more general solutions than this one. That's a very special solution on which we can do some analytics. There is a kind of systematic way to derive vertical solutions, but then you can't do analytical prediction on their stability. So yes, in principle, you could do systems in which, so that the total velocity is conserved. Yes.
In numerical calculations, do you more often see
No, you don't see. So if you're talking about like annulus of vorticity, you don't see that. Usually you see like, it's not patches in the sense that the vorticity is not discontinuous. So it's more like a smooth function, but you clearly have a maximum of minimum of vorticity in the vortex core. Like in RWI simulations, in also bioclinic simulations, you see that usually. So this is not the perfect model, but it's, yeah, you know, fits what we see.
So that's a kind of a difference with quasi-geostrophic vortices.
Yes.
With smaller definition.
Yeah. Right. So once we have this, so I'm going to consider this solution, the theta equals zero solution. So my vortex is going to be aligned with the y-axis. It is stable. And now I'm going to go 3D and look at the 3D stability of the flow inside the patch. Okay. So to do that, I'm going to focus really on this patch, forget about the patch boundary, and just look at the stability, the local stability of the flow there. Okay.
Locally, so, meaning much less than wavelength much less than A and B.
So the horizontal wavelength of my perturbations is going to be much smaller than the than B. That's the limit. Right. So in this limit, and given that solution, you can show that the the streamlines are essentially elliptical, and they satisfy this aspect ratio. So you can write down the shape of the flow inside the vortex, which looks like that. So you have ux naught is s chi minus 1 y, and the uy naught is minus s chi squared divided by chi minus 1 x. So that's the shape of the flow, so it's linear on the spatial coordinates in the bulk of the vortex. You might notice that if I take the limit chi goes to infinity, you recover the linear shear, which is here. Right. So the limit chi goes to infinity means I'm back to the traditional Schoenbach problem. The only novelty here is that I also have a UX perturbation, which appears for finite chi. It's the only thing. Otherwise, it's like a Schoenbach. It's technically, it's an extension of the Schoenbach for elliptical flows. So next, I'm going to look at perturbations of this thing. So, there's a bit of algebra here. So a way to look at it is to say that the flow u naught, and that's a very general point, is a matrix A times the coordinate x, y, z, where A is, well, you know, it's, can I write it that way? It's s over chi minus 1 times not 1 over chi, 0. We have minus chi, 0, 0. And that's the original formulation for it. Next, you write the linearized equation based on this steady flow. So you take that, and you look for perturbations. So I'm going to say that u is u naught plus v, where v is a small perturbation. And the equation of motion for this small perturbation is going to be dTv plus v dot grad u naught plus u naught dot grad v equal minus grad p minus 2 omega cross v. So I'm throwing away this term because I'm, well, the vortex is in geostrophic balance in this system. So this one is cancelled by the pressure gradient, essentially, in the bulk of the vortex. So these are the linearized equation. So the first thing I'm going to do is to look at what we call horizontal instabilities. So these horizontal instabilities are instabilities where you only have a Z dependency for the perturbation. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say that V is V times exponential I K Z. And that's it, nothing else. Why do I do that? When I do that, I can get rid of this u naught dot grad v, because u naught is in the plane. So I get rid of this term, and I get dTv. Then this v dot grad u naught, I'm going to write that in indices notation. So that's going to be right. So that's going to be dk, dk of I, j, j. This one is gone. Minus dip, and then epsilon ijk to epsilon omega j, dk. That's index notation. So now this stuff is something very simple because dk xj is just delta jk. So you write that as I aij bj. Okay? And you get an homogeneous system of equations. So what does it look like? The nice thing is that if you look at the perturbation for what happens in the vertical direction, you'll find essentially Vz equal naught. Because of the incompressible approximation, you get dV equals zero, so that K dz equals zero. That's easy. Then in the horizontal direction, There is no gradient of P because there is no horizontal gradient, so I get rid of this one. And I get a system of two coupled equations, which are the following: dt dx and dt dy. Dx equal minus 2 omega dx. Okay? So these two terms are just the expansion of this matrix here. And that's very simple. This describes epicyclic oscillations. Nothing else. How surprising. So, okay, you solve this system, you know how to do it. And you get frequency for this epicyclic oscillations. With a typical frequency, which is 2 omega minus that stuff times 2 omega minus that one. Okay, that's the frequency of the epicyclic oscillations. Now, if you take the limit chi goes to infinity, then this one cancels, and this one is minus s. So chi goes to infinity, you get kappa squared is equal to 2 omega times 2 omega minus s. And now if I say that s is 3 half of omega, as in a Keplerian disk, as what Sebastian did, then I get kappa squared equal omega squared. That's the epicyclic frequency of a typical Keplerian disk. Nothing more. Okay? So in the limit of chi goes to infinity, you recover the traditional epicyclic frequency you get in this showing box I started with. Now if I take a limit chi whatever, you find that this kappa squared can change sign. It changes signs at two locations. So what you have is, I'm not going to see anything here. So if I plot kappa squared, kappa squared as a function of chi, I start here with the epicyclic frequency of the system without any vortex. And then it goes like that. Okay? You have these two poles, so to say. So if I say that, as in a disk, that s is 3 half of omega, then you find the first pole at chi equal 4 and chi equal 3 half. In this region, you are unstable. That's what is called the horizontal instability. Okay? As soon as the vortex has this typical aspect ratio, it goes unstable. And this is fast, because you can check that this stuff is of the order of omega. So your vortex essentially gets destroyed. So at this point, I had a movie. I don't know how I'm supposed to show that. Or can I? Maybe not. No, it's too late. Well, I don't
know. Can't
draw a movie on the board. Okay, I can do...
You could just hold it up for us.
Yeah.
You could be Vanna White.
Everybody see it?
No, we don't.
If you stand behind it, play it around a bit.
Just starting it. Right. Okay. So this is a chi equal 3 vortex embedded in a sheared flow, which corresponds to a Keplerian flow. What is shown is the gray shade is the contour of the patch of vorticity, and the color stuff are perturbations of the background vorticity. And what you see is that you get these high KZ stuff, which are growing, and which destroys the vortex eventually.
What sets the maximum?
It's scale free in this limit. You see, there is no KZ. I just say that there is a I need a KZ to get rid of this term, but then it's scale free.
So the spectrum of the fluctuations in KZ is actually
flat.
Broad. I see.
Down to the viscous scale.
I see. Okay.
So it goes again.
Question?
Yeah.
So when you do this perturbation, you don't perturb the shape, right? You don't perturb the solutes. Right?
No. You start with this 2D solution, mm-hmm. which you find stable. You find it to be stable in your simulation, and you add small scale 3D noise in there, and you let that evolve. So the 2D vortex stays there. Perturbations are carried around, but because of this stuff, they grow exponentially. Okay.
But in numerical simulations, you have viscosity.
Yes, I do. This was done with a spectral coil, so I do have viscosity. It's well, depends how you define it. Based on the vortex size, it's something like 100. It's this stuff is quite unstable because I mean the growth rates are of the order of the orbital frequency. So 1 ton of a time is enough to get 1 e-folding time, typically. So it's quite rapid.
What is the energy source for this instability?
It's the background modified shear. Because the thing is, as you can see here. These two terms are actually due to the shear of the vortex itself. It's not the it's made both of the shear of the box itself plus a component coming from the elliptical shape of the string lines. So that's the source of free energy. And it's easy, right? You multiply that by VI, and you'll get that you have an energy source which is VIIAJBJ. That's the source. So that's one of stress times this matrix.
Do you require KZ greater than zero?
Oh, no, whatever.
If you make that go to zero, you cover this back?
If I take what? K goes to zero?
KZ goes to zero.
Well, then I have to consider horizontal perturbations as well, which is the subject of the next talk.
Well, and you have to do that because for any KZ, that's the fastest growing?
Well, the thing is, more formally, since horizontally I need to have a horizontal wavelength shorter than the vortex size, what I'm saying here is essentially that KZ is much, much larger than KX and KY. But I can't have KX equal naught because the vortex has a bounder.
Sure.
So the more formal way to derive that is to say that we take the limit kz goes to infinity compared to kx and ky, and then we get these equations. So I have simplified a bit here, but the essence is the same.
Because you have instability, you don't have now vorticity is constant. Do you have?
No, you don't. You get yes. Okay. That's a 3D perturbation, so you get vortex stretching.
Yeah.
And actually, there is an interpretation of these instabilities in terms of vortex stretching. So another way to say that, I forgot to mention, is, and this is the epicyclic frequency, I said that, but essentially what happens is that inside vortex, we are violating the Rayleigh criterion in the sense that the profile of angular momentum is decreasing outward inside the vortex. That's what's happening. And that's why it goes unstable. It's the main reason. Yes.
And so have you looked at horizontal perturbation? Because I think there's an analog. Isn't there an analog of shearing waves or generalization of shearing waves?
It's coming. Coming.
Okay.
Relax. That was just the beginning.
Okay.
That was the easy part. Now, so let me turn to horizontal perturbations. I'm going to keep that.
And that. And how this instability can be stabilized?
It can't really.
Hmm?
You can't really stabilize it.
You cannot.
No, it's very powerful. If you add magnetic fields, if I have time, I will show you, mm-hmm. it's even worse. Unless you have a very strong field. You can stabilize it with a very strong field in the vortex.
If you have turbulence, then you can assume
you have a sort of effective viscosity and presumably stabilize it, yes. Mm-hmm. So you could do the same analysis with an implicit viscosity and find that for sufficiently high viscosity, then this instability is stabilized, yes.
You mean turbulent viscosity?
Yeah, well, yes, yeah. Turbulent viscosity. Right, so now let's have a look at the more general case. Here I have assumed that V was like that, and now I'm going to say that I consider perturbation, so that's a general case. V is going to be V of t times exponential of I k of t dot x, right? Why am I doing that? You'll see in a minute. This trick is here to get rid of this term u naught dot grad v. We're going to see that in a minute. These sort of waves are a bit peculiar because the wave vector is evolving in time, okay? These are historically called Kelvin waves. It's an old stuff, 1880-something. You get exactly the same sort of thing. So for people familiar with the Schering box, these are called the Schering waves. So what I'm going to do here is a generalization of these Schering waves in an elliptical flow. So you're going to see it's quite simple. The thing is, so I introduce this decomposition in that equation. I have dt bi. So you have two time, explicit time dependency in there. You have this v of t, and you have this one here, ik dot x. So you have plus a vi, ivi, I'm sorry. So you have two i's, the index and the complex i. And then you have dk j by dt xj, okay? That's the time derivative of this thing. Then we have this v dot grad u naught, which is this term. So I have plus aij dj. And then I have this one, u naught dot grad v, which you can expand. So this is going to be akj. Xj, dk, dr. Okay? That's u naught dot grad v. And then I keep minus grad p, so this is minus I, ki of t, remember? And then I have d Coriolis force minus 2 epsilon omega j dk. Right. So now the problem is that in the full problem, you do have an explicit dependency on the spatial coordinate. And that's something you don't want if you want to study this problem. So what we are going to do is we are going to cancel altogether the explicit x dependency. You have it here and you have it here, okay? So we're going to say that these two guys are equal to zero. That's a way to derive the solution. So dk of vi, sorry, is kk times I. Right. So I say this thing is equal to zero, and I get dkj by dt equal minus a right? You say that, then you cancel, there's two terms. And you only get a differential equation for k. So k depends on time, and you do get the time dependency of k, right? So that's a very general way, because you can say A is whatever you want. It could be a 3D elliptical stuff, it can be anything. So in this particular case I'm talking about, you can derive the solution, done it for you, and you find...
Are they separately zero, or is it a tangent?
No, the sum of the two is zero. The idea is that you want to involve xj, okay? So if you add these two things, you just add these two guys here. That's I bi xj times dkj by dt plus kkakj equals not, well. That's the sum of these two terms. And if you want to remove the explicit x dependency, well, you just say this is zero.
I can't figure out why.
Well, it's a way to derive the solution. Yeah. So it's a very general way to derive the solution.
Yeah. But this is very strongly in the same to the threshold.
Oh, yes.
You cannot use this approach for when you have black growth rate and
No. You can. I mean, this is formally. I mean, it's just a way to define what is k of t. Okay. I'm free to choose the k of t I want. Yes. I'm choosing k of t so that this stuff is zero.
It works for any linear flow, right?
Yes. So you do get Chern waves out of it. Okay.
Yeah, but it doesn't have to be. Yeah.
No, it doesn't have to be. Here, it's elliptical. It can be a 3D mess. The only requirement is that the flow has to depend linearly on the coordinate.
Right.
That's it.
Like the Hubble flow.
Yeah. Anything. So in this particular case.
Sorry, one more question.
Yes.
So you're expecting k naught to have an extreme line time? So
No. If you just derive these two equations, okay, let me write them down. So in this, if you take these A matrix I have here, you get dkx by dt equal s over chi minus 1 chi ky, and dky by dt minus s over chi minus 1 1 over chi kx. Okay? That's the differential equation. Okay? Now you solve that, and what you find is that k is periodic in time. Describing a periodic solution. So the solution is kx of t, so well, that's one solution. It's a way to write it. Chi sine theta cos phi of t, I'm going to define phi in a minute. Ky of t is k naught minus k naught. Minus k naught sine theta sine phi of t, and kz is a constant, because yeah, I have dkz by dt equal naught. So it's k naught cos theta. And phi, it's just a way to we normalize time, essentially. So it's s over chi minus 1 times t. So essentially, when phi equals 2 pi, it means that you've done one turn at a time. So what this is, what is this sign? This stuff, and that's the fun part.
What is going on if chi is bigger than less than 1?
Oh, it's not defined. I mean,
no,
if chi is smaller than 1, then you just say theta equal pi over 2, and then the solution is unstable. So the limit is chi goes to 1 is infinitely strong vortex. Okay, so what this thing is, this is kx, this is ky, and that stuff is describing a wave vector which is rotating in Fourier space. Except that it's along the x-axis, so the So the major axis is on x. As you can see here, kx is chi times k1, essentially. Okay? So you have a wave vector which is rotating, so that's in the plane, and it has some finite kz. So I don't know if you can see that stuff. It's an ellipse, off-bit plane ellipse. And your wave vectors are rotating on that stuff. Right? So that's how you describe the solution. And once you've done that, well, you have cancelled this term and this term. So you are left with a very simple system. dTvi is equal to minus I k of t p minus 2 epsilon I k k, dk. And then I have minus iaj dj. The only novelty here, compared to the horizontal instability, is that I have this pressure gradient, k of t times p. And I also have power dimension, k of t, I, di, equal 1. So that stuff is describing the epicyclic motions I had here. These are the same equation. Okay? So that's epicyclic motion. And that stuff is something which depends explicitly on time. So it's a kind of periodic forcing. So you have a periodic forcing of the system plus a normal mode. You can get resonances out of that. And that's what is called, in the hydro literature, the elliptical instability. It's a resonance between a forcing, periodic forcing, which is given here, and a normal mode, which is here, an inertial mode. But it can be whatever you want. Here it's an inertial mode. Okay? Yes?
Do you have here forcing or this amplification or not?
No, I don't have any forcing. What I'm saying is that the explicit time dependency of k appears as sort of effective forcing of the linear equations. Mm-hmm. It's not a forcing in the straight sense. Yes?
What is P here?
What is P is a pressure.
Yeah, what difference is
it? So you have to define it by solving the continuity equation.
So it's going to be a function of
so it's
velocity,
right?
It's going to be a function of velocity?
Yes.
So it's not really force, right?
No, I mean, it's a pressure force, but in the end, yeah, it depends on the velocity component. So I'm not going to go through all the derivation here. The essence of what I want to point out is that you get a forcing here plus, well, forcing, like an periodic excitation and a normal mode. And the thing is, you can get a resonance if you say that this term is small, okay? So you are in the limit of a quasi-vertical perturbation, so that this term is small. Then you can show that you get a resonance whenever the epicyclic frequency is some fraction of the turnover frequency, which is here. Okay? And n is an integer. Whenever you have that, then the periodicity of the vortex is forcing your inertial mode. You get a resonance, and the mode grows. You can't derive that analytically for a general k, unfortunately, no way to derive analytically the solutions in the general case. So this problem is called a Floquet problem, and there are numerical techniques to solve this sort of problems. The only trick is that you have these resonances here.
So I understand you have found a class of solution by imposing this relation on a wave number. Mm-hmm. Are there normal modes of the flow? And in other words, could you get other perturbation that wouldn't satisfy this condition and that would go faster?
Not that I know of. This is I've just chosen a perturbation so that I could get a solution out of the system. Now the solutions you get, I mean, you can show that these solutions.
But you would want them to be normal modes.
You can't get normal modes because of this periodicity thing here. The only normal mode you can get, I mean, strictly speaking, is the KZ modes. Otherwise, you have a time dependency. What I'm saying here is that if you consider a box which is embedded in the flow, like a small sharing box, what you see is a kind of periodic deformation of the box like that. And you will get a time dependency in the whatever perturbation you put in.
But any perturbation is going to project onto these modes,
yes,
naturally?
Yeah, that's a complete basis. Right?
Yes,
is that a complete basis?
Yes. Yes.
So that's
like shearing waves are
yeah,
as well.
It's a complete basis.
Okay.
But as far as you have resonance here, you will reach a nonlinear stage very fast, and then this technique cannot work.
Yes. I'm talking about the linear state decay.
Yes.
Yes. So that's the second class of resonances. And so if you plot, I don't know how to do that.
Jeffrey?
Yeah.
Can I just take a step back and ask the physical thing that's happened? So we have a disk, and somehow you make a vortice. And this is way, so my question is, how do you make a vortice? What's the idea behind making a vortice from something that's not turbulence that then is going to cause an instability that causes the turbulence? See what I mean? I mean, because that's what, I mean, right? You don't want the turbulence. I mean, if you have the turbulence already, then you got that. So what's the...
Yeah. The thing is, there's the parametric mode, for example, is quite hard. So this resonance here. Yeah. Is quite hard to get numerically because it's a kind of periodic stuff which does not follow the grid, which requires high order time integration because it's time dependent, and quite good curve without too much diffusion. Otherwise, it dies. Okay. So the thing is, people are looking for it in finite difference code. They don't see it. In spectral codes, you do see that. So the trick I'm doing here is that I'm warning. There are instabilities analytically in these vortices. It's not because you don't see them numerically that they don't exist.
Okay, but I'm wondering, is there a linear way that you make what's the linear way in the disk that you make the vortice that then becomes unstable?
There are, so linearly you can have the Rossby wave instability. We heard about one of them last week, which is essentially a sort of Kelvin Helmholtz instability in a rotating system. But it's essentially the same thing. Normally, you can also have what astrophysicists call the baroclinic instability, which is subcritical, but it also produces large-scale 2D vortices, which look like this solution. So there are some ways. And then the question is, what is the outcome? Okay, you produce these 2D vortices. What do they do? Do they survive? They die? And way to know that is to, well, are they linearly unstable? Does it?
Yes, I just, so this, those stabilities that you talked about that make the vortice don't cause any kind of, I mean, what you're looking for is effectively angular momentum transport.
No. I've not mentioned anything regarding angular momentum transport. I said we do see stuff which looks like vortices, and the question is how do we explain that stuff? I'm not talking about angular momentum transport here. Okay. I don't want to transport angular momentum.
But eventually what you want to do, you want to have an instability that causes turbulence.
That's not my problem here.
Oh.
My problem is to understand whether or not these vortices, which are predicted by numerical simulations in 2D, are stable. See, people are seeing vortices in their 2D simulations. And observations tend to indicate that there are stuff which looks like vortices. So it seems like, okay, we got it. So the thing is, I'm saying here is that in 3D best stuff, we see numerical simulations are unstable, but always, almost always.
It has nothing to do with angular momentum transport. It's a different problem. Okay.
Yeah, people get excited by vortices because they trap dust and then form planks.
Yes.
Okay. So
I'm not concerned about angular momentum. I'm not trying to.
You're not trying to make turbulence.
No.
Okay.
I'm just wondering whether or not these vortices are stable, and if they are not, then we need to understand how they are stabilized. Yes.
How likely is it that in some general fluid setup that you have, that you would ever get to the condition of excited that particular solution?
That one?
The way of rephrasing the question.
The Kida thingy?
Yes, so you start with some general fluid that you said. You mentioned numerical solutions in general. So how? What's the possibility that you would excite exactly this kind of state that you have? You know, this very particular.
So this thing is.
That starts this whole cycle.
So you will never excite exactly this thing, but you do get a physical understanding of what's going on. You understand two things. One, you can get horizontal instabilities as soon as the aspect ratio is too small, chi equals 4 in this system, okay? That's very tough. That's very unstable. That's unavoidable. It's just, you know. Next, you can get resonances whenever the turnover time is of the order of the local inertial mode, right? So you can get those resonances. That's general. Here, you can derive it formally because you have a solution which is nice enough so that you can work out the algebra. But the physical problem is general. Now, if you say, I don't want to use a Kida vortex, I just start with one of the instabilities we have at hand. And so, for example, we look at these barokinic instability, it's going to produce vortices. And now the question is, what is the outcome? The outcome is that you do see those instabilities, even though the vortex you form are not exactly Kida vortices. But the essence of instability is still there. You do see turbulence in these cores. And you see turbulence because essentially the vortex has an aspect ratio which becomes smaller and smaller. So there's resonances, and this stuff starts to get over, and it produces turbulence in the vortex. So
in principle, if you have turbulence and large-scale shear motions, you can generate vorticity by so-called vorticity varying, which is known now.
But they want stable vortices for some physical problem. This is the question, right? There's some physical problem out there that wants stable vortices.
Yeah.
And there is, okay, so I hadn't appreciated, I forgot about the trapping.
Yeah, I mean, there is the trapping, and now that you know that you have these ALMA observations, which tend to indicate you have huge axisymmetric stuff, mm-hmm. people think these are vortices. Mm-hmm. So there is a huge industry starting now about vortices, except that most of the numerical evidence is are 2D evidences. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Right. So that's an example of I'm sorry if everybody can't see it. So here, this is a 3D shearing box problem in which, so that's the vertical vorticity. I don't know if you can see it. I'm sorry for that.
Maybe you want to step a little forward here.
Yeah, I can see it just fine.
So the plot here is vertical vorticity. The blue patches are anticyclones. Okay. These stuff are generated by a baroclinic instability, subcortical, etc. But that's another topic. They are there, and they are excited by some feedback. Next, I'm plotting here the vertical velocity in the stuff. I mean, in the simulation. And what you see is that each of these cores have 3D vertical motion in it. Right? Each of them. And you can track when this turbulence starts with this criterion I derived. Okay? So these stuff are the kind of saturated state of those instabilities I'm talking about here. Okay? So that's an example where I'm not starting with any Kida vortex or anything, but I do recover the physics. Right?
Question.
Yeah.
In one of the previous tutorials, it was mentioned that normally there is vertical stratification, which is neglected.
Yeah.
Vertical stratification, now we should, I would not say kill, but greatly attenuate vertical motions.
Yeah. So the thing is, when you add stratification, you can have a resonance between the turnover time and the gravity mode instead of the epicyclic mode, or mixture of the two. Now, if the stratification is strong, then this resonance is a high order resonance. So you have lots of vertical gravity oscillation before the vortex can do one turnover. And because of that, the growth rate of instability is diminished. You still get the same effect, but yes. vertical, it's not quite vertical gravity, it's the vertical entropy gradient. If it's very stably stratified, then the coupling becomes a high order coupling. And then, yes, the both ways are in
it. Don't you expect the mode to change in nature as you move away from the equatorial plane? Because the stratification vanishes in the equatorial plane. So you're back to this limit?
So here, yeah, here I'm in the mid-plane limit.
It changes when you move up.
Yes. So I mean, we did derive the full stuff with vertical Boussinesq stratification in this 2009 paper, and you do see what you are talking about. That the growth rates are significantly affected. It's still there because the resonance is unavoidable, and the horizontal instability doesn't care about vertical stratification. So that stuff is always there as well.
N changes the pressure ratio of things is very high.
Yeah.
And that's of course N zero will be different.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. But I mean in principle you expect N squared to be of the order of omega squared in aggression disks. So it's not that stratified. It's not GFD, but yeah. So I had something about the link to the MRI when you have magnetic fields, but I think I won't do that here. It's already linked. So the only information is when you add a magnetic field, then you get essentially the dispersion relation of Sebastian, except that it's modified by the fact that the epicyclic frequency is that stuff. So then instead of having a little band of horizontal instability, you get a horizontal instability which starts at chi equal 3/2 and which goes to chi equal infinity. So you get the hydro stuff and it connects to the MRI branch here and it's unstable all there. Which means that you can't, I mean, it's hard to get vortices in ideal MHD with a mean field because these are terribly unstable. There's no way to stabilize them.
Even if this tension, the magnetic tension.
Well, unless the magnetic tension is like beta smaller than 1. In which case, yes, you can stabilize it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.